This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. We are looking at the question of why have a constitution and now why not start over, given the present circumstances of the United States of America as compared to what was a breakaway colony of the United Kingdom in the late 18th century. I summarize the dissenting book quickly. The dissenters would like more judges on the Supreme Court. The dissenters would like new states formed out of old states. The dissenters speak of abolishing the Electoral College. And the dissenters speak of shifting power to the elected, away from the appointed. Professor, does all this add up to a criticism of federalism? Is that what is the disturbing aspect?
Well, no, I think it's a criticism of conservative Americans. This is all prompted not by any abstract philosophical concern. I think more than anything else, some of the decisions in the recent term at the Supreme Court have galvanized the progressive movement to say that we can't win under the current system. We know we're right on the substance, so we have to change everything from structure. Obviously, the biggest case on this is Dobbs, which overturned the decision in Roe v. Wade, having to do with the constitutional right of abortion. But there are other cases, including the case which sort of allowed, in this case, popular majorities, not to prohibit property majorities from regulating gun use. And then there was also this key case about West Virginia having to do with the size of the administrative state, where the conservative court essentially kept the wings of the president and of his delegated authority in trying to put regulations in place that would change the way in which we regulate emissions from coal plants and other types of institutions. That's what's driving it. Now, well, what happens is to get yourself in this particular state of mind, what you have to do is to assume that every one of these decisions is some kind of an intellectual or moral abomination. And if you read the pages of The New Yorker, The Washington Post, The New York Times, and other similar outlets, that's exactly what they believe. And since they're so sure about the substantive issues, for them, the structural reforms are the ones that you really need, and they're prepared to put them in place. This is absolute folly. It's almost madness. The idea that you're going to change the fundamental structure of a constitution in ways that you do not understand in order to deal with three wayward Supreme Court decisions, it's just odd. Right now, in effect, the Congress has already passed legislation, which I oppose, trying to give the Environmental Protection Agency more power to deal with the way in which it regulates emissions from coal plants in similar situations. Many states are trying to pass other gun laws, which may pass muster. Many states have already decided to go to the people, which is what essentially the progressives want. And places like New York and California have already said what Roe v. Wade said is no longer the law of the land under the Constitution, but it's the law of the land under legislation in our state. So they stop looking at more moderate situations. And never once do you even have the slightest recognition on the part of any of these people that they may be wrong. And if you're going to be an academic and you're going to be an intellectual, what you have to do is essentially declare open season on your own past ideas. The way in which I like to put it, and I've had a fair number of intellectual changes in my own life, is that after something that you've written or said 5 years ago, it goes into the public domain and you should criticize yourself the same way you would criticize anybody else who made that particular notion. But there's just no self-restraint in how it is that they push these things forward. What happens, of course, is they may get it completely crazy. So we're going to take states and break them into two. We'll keep California as one, and we'll break Texas into four states. You break it into four states, and maybe there's a way to do it. The Constitution is surprisingly lax on how new states are created out of old states. And so now you're going to get six Republican senators more than you had before. Well, then you retaliate, and you do the same thing in California when the Democrats are in power. So now you have a Senate of 180 members, right? And the whole thing can't function at all. When the Supreme Court, sure, you could pack it, but virtually all of our rules are organized around an operation with nine judges. If you start making it 15, it becomes balky. It's much more difficult to settle hearings, decide cases, write individual opinions, and so forth. Every major Supreme Court advocate who's sensitive to these issues says, look, the size is about right. It's been this way by statute since 1869. For God's sakes, let's just keep it in place. And then if you don't like the judges you have, try to win a general election and appoint the ones whom you want. And so, you know, you get Kijanzi Jackson. She would not have been an appointment of a Trump administration. And she will join the Supreme Court. If Biden wins the election, there will be another set of changes. And then it may well turn out 6-3 one way, is now 5-4 the other way. justices even have a tendency when they're left alone to change their mind. And so it may not on every issue be 6-3. There are criminal procedure issues where Justice Gorsuch tends to vote with Justice Sotomayor. There are structural institutional issues where it turns out Justice Roberts is a lot more cautious than some of the others. So he did not join in the majority opinion, and Dobbs wrote his own more cautious take on the thing. And so what you do is you try to work through conventional processes without upsetting the overall apple cart. Because if you do this as a popular democracy type situation, it's not clear that these guys are going to win. But let me just make just one simple observation. You look at the popular vote, and oftentimes the popular vote is for candidate A and the electoral college is for B. Now, the reason that this happens is in part because the people who are running these elections know that a vote in a swing case is worth 1,000 times a vote in a case which is safe for one party. So let the Democrats run up huge majorities in a state like California or New York. Let the Republicans do the same thing in Texas or Tennessee. What you do is you kind of concentrate on places like Colorado, the so-called purple states. Well, that changes the way the popular vote's going to go. But the moment you make the popular vote decisive, nobody's ever going to go to a rural district again. Everybody's going to campaign in the large cities and so forth. Then you're going to have machine votes that dominated by a single party. And all of a sudden, now it makes every bit of sense that you could have to run over by fair means or foul, run up the tally in New York, run it up in California, run it up in Texas, because all votes are now marginal. And if you then have to have a recount, it's not going to be Dade County, Florida. It's going to be the entire United States. So the Electoral College was put into place for one reason. It clearly did not work. It's not a deliberative body. There's no way on earth that you could possibly deliberate with all of these things. So what they did is they had a system of bound electors. And this was a fiction, and it was sustained duly by the Supreme Court under a number of occasions, most recently in 1952. And it worked. When you put together something like this, what you do is you jerry-build the Constitution. The Constitution was a great experiment. Some of its systems of indirect control, of which, for example, the Electoral College was one, they don't work. And what happens is they get slowly eroded away by custom and convention. Custom and convention is very fragile. And if you start to tackle it in a head-on assault, you're in big trouble. So when the Supreme Court was asked to allow free electors to have their say back in the 2016 election, it turned out they said no. Right. And they said no. And they were right to say it, because that completely unravels the system and they have nothing to put into place. They made, this is Justice Kagan's originalist argument, which was just plain wrong. She's saying, well, that's the way we did it originally, but it was originally a deliberative body and the pledges were never part of the original Constitution. But the continuity is there. And one of the great credits to Justice Kagan is on this and on a bunch of other issues having to do with technical questions like the scope of military jurisdiction and things like that. She says, if we have a long established process, we are not going to go back and re-examine its pedigree.
Richard, we have 30 seconds and I need your intuition.
Okay.
Changing the Constitution, starting afresh or amending it, do you give that odds for the balance of this century, given the factionalism that's extant?
I don't think it's going to happen, because I think that the sufficient division means that you have to get a supermajority to have these major changes. And I just don't think they're going to happen. And we have to protect it from both left and right.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.